pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
We're not moving on.
Second half of the program begins right now. Big second half coming your way. We'll get things started here with the 2 minute drill going around the country 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories, you know what, where they're happening. It's brought to you by Gary Joslin and Joslin's Jewelry. The spot, if you're looking to really wow somebody this holiday season, get to Joslin's. I'll tell you what, right now, cut and color are everything. Gary Joslin knows it. Only the most brilliant diamonds will do at Joslin's. Go see him today. They're at 95th and Antioch. Stop on in. You'll be greeted with a warm smile. The entire staff is fantastic, whether it's Gary, his wife, his daughter, family-owned and operated for more than 40 years. Gary Joslin's been the jeweler you can count on. If you want the most beautiful diamonds right now at the most, best price you can possibly get, it's at Joslin's. Go to Joslin's Jewelry today. Gary Joslin. Excuse me, choked up, just thinking about how great a guy Gary Joslin is. You're not going to find anyone better. Go see him. Happy to do repairs. Most of them can be done while you wait. You got an emergency with jewelry? You just need to go see Gary. Gary Joslin, 95th and Antioch, online at joslinsjewelry.com. Let's start things off in Syracuse, New York. We talked some Buffalo Bills with Matt Perino. Covers the Bills on their beat for Syracuse.com. Matt, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. Just getting back to Buffalo.
Yeah, what do we think about that performance? More about the Bills or, man, the Pats just suck?
I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, it just looks like an operation in New England that just doesn't have any vision. And it's crazy to say that, considering who's kind of running that show and how he's done it over the last couple of decades. But the quarterback isn't very good. They got a couple different people trying to give him the messages on game day, and then this defense that was supposed to be elite, I mean tops in the league over the at times this season. You know, the Bills were able to do what they don't really do well, and that is run the ball consistently. They unlocked James Cook a little bit in this game, and then Josh Allen just makes a couple spectacular plays, and there you have it. I mean, they cruised to a victory 24-10, and they didn't really have to even do much offensively in the second half.
They still exposed Josh Allen to a lot of hits. He got popped on a throw, got hit a couple times. They ran him 8 times. You know, he's coming off a bum elbow. Anybody shocked how much they continue to expose him in the run game?
No, I mean, this is just going to be the way that it goes with this team. I mean, when they're at their best, he is out making plays out of structure, a lot of times audibling to these plays. And we talked to him after the game about where that elbow is at. He said he's good to go. He's ready to roll. He was full participant in practice all week leading up to this game. So I think that they're in a place now where he can make all the throws. The arm feels good. And I think the elbow thing, it's in the past.
Yeah. What do you think about the rest of the schedule? How confident are Bills fans? How confident are you that the Buffalo Bills can potentially run down the Kansas City Chiefs? We know they've got the tiebreaker. All they got to do is finish even. Rest of the schedule for the Buffalo Bills, it's pretty salty. Jets at home, Dolphins at home, at the Bears, at the Bengals, Patriots at home. I guess three divisional opponents all at home and a roadie at Cincinnati. What are you feeling like they finish up at?
Well, I almost feel like you got to run the table at this point, because even if, you know, the Chiefs lose to the Bengals, which I think is the one game where you're probably like there might be a little bit of a chance, that you still have to go undefeated the rest of the way if you're the Bills. So it's just not super likely. So I think at this point, your sole focus, if you're Josh Allen, Sean McDermott, with the way that the Miami Dolphins have played this year, is winning the division and making sure you at least have one, hopefully two home games. And then you try to go exercise some demons in Kansas City. They did it in the regular season now the past 2 years. I think it would be fitting if they were finally able to get over the hump to do it in Kansas City at Patrick Mahomes' house. I think that's probably going to be the way that they have to do it. So confident in them catching the Chiefs, not very. But this is a game Miami Dolphins team that's going to have to now really prove it over the next 3 weeks. the Niners on the road, the Chargers on the road, and then, oh, by the way, you got to come to Buffalo in December. The early reports are that there could be snow. It could be really, really cold in Orchard Park, and Tua hasn't been good in those situations in the past, so it's going to be super fun.
All right, you know what sucks? Syracuse basketball right now. Jim Boeheim said last year that, no, I'm not going to leave it like this. I'll come back next year, I'll get it all fixed up, and then I'll step away, which I was like laughing because if he gets it all fixed up, then he says, no, we're all good, I'm going to keep coaching, right? It was like there's no way he's ever just going to walk away, right? They're going to have to ultimately tell him, you got to go, and that is going to have to be at the end of this year, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know if I'd even wait. I'd start the plan now. I mean, it's absolutely – I talk to people all the time, Syracuse grads, people that just grew up around – the central western New York area, they just always rooted for this team. And they're at their wit's end. I mean, they're tired of the whole operation, the egotistical approach to it all that they kind of seem with Boeheim. And, Mike Krzyzewski, he called it a career. I think it's time for Jimmy Boeheim to do the same.
Yeah. Do they have a name that everybody wants? Is it Nate Oates because of his time there at Buffalo? Is there a popular choice?
Well, I'm a UB grad, University of Buffalo, where Nate Oates, lifted the program. So, no, I don't really want Nate Oates to go to Syracuse and lift that program. But I'm sure a lot of Central Western New Yorkers would love it.
All right. We'll see what ends up happening. Great stuff. Matt Perino there, Syracuse.com in Buffalo. Appreciate the time, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, man. Take care.
The player's name is Chris Domino, 680 The Fan in Atlanta, Georgia. Chris, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm living the dream, my friend. Living the dream.
Yeah.
Georgia, 17.5-point favorites against LSU in their backyard in the SEC championship game. Is that enough of a point spread? Would you even consider betting LSU in this game?
Yeah, I actually did. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah, I can say that.
Yes,
it's
legal here in Kansas.
Yeah, I spoke of it, and I think it's a little bit much. I think Jaden Daniels, their quarterback situation with an ankle sprain, supposedly not a high ankle sprain, shoot it up, rub it down, do whatever you have to do. He wants to go, and that's good. I think that's the thing. I could end up getting burned if he can't play or can't play well, but I think actually 17 is a little bit stout in terms of the numbers given up. This is LSU season. It is kind of crazy. They went from being a team that could possibly be in this thing to being a team that's looking at four losses. I don't think they win, but I think Georgia's not really the type of team that rolls it up on many people. So, yeah, I'll take the 17 and see what happens.
Is Georgia really this good? I mean, we've talked about it. The schedule wasn't that rugged considering they play in the SEC, right? Are they really number one and number one with the boat? Everyone's got them in. Well, I guess if they got throttled by LSU, maybe there's some scenario where they don't make the playoffs, but they pretty much could mail this one in and still make the playoffs. But do you think they are hands down the best team in college football, that they can re-rack after losing so much talent to the draft last year and still be a full stride ahead of everybody?
So if they're not that much better to be declared easily the best team or definitively the best team, I can tell you what I'm really impressed with, and I've been on a kick lately, and all due respect to Sonny Dykes and maybe even a Lincoln Riley, I think Kirby Smart's the National Coach of the Year. Now, I don't think he's going to win it. Hell, I'm not even sure he's going to win the Conference Coach of the Year. As a matter of fact, I don't think he will, but I think he's the National Coach of the Year. So I think everything they might lack in being demonstrably better, the air is not too thin up here. I think Tennessee, they found out it's why you start at base camp before you go up these big mountains. You got to get used to it. I think there were a couple of teams this year that found out it's not easy. It's not easy to be the hunted. And I think what Georgia's done coming off of last year, losing 15 guys to the draft, I think this is Coach of the Year stuff. I think they have every advantage that comes with being as good, if not better than anybody, but being more ready and able to handle the moment. And I think, look, it's crazy. I don't think they lose the game tomorrow, but there's a chance they lose two SEC championships in a row and then win the national title in both years. And I will take them to win the national championship every bit as much as I'll take them to win the game tomorrow.
Is that a thing about getting over the hump and winning the conference championship? Or does that, like, I know we all, it means more, but really the national championship is fine.
Yeah, look, I know a trophy gets the bigger case. It's called butt smear. Every one of these schools that plays powerful anything has a really impressive museum, trophy case, whatever. I know where the national championship trophy goes, but I promise you, in the SEC, that SEC championship trophy is not far behind it. I mean, they're within feet of each other. They display that trophy proudly. Kirby's 1-3 in these things, and you don't want to be 1-4 in anything, especially when people are talking about you being maybe the best coach in college football. You don't want to lose the championship game four times out of five. So it is a big deal, and it does mean more. And I've lived here 29 years. I don't think I've really been hypnotized by anything, but I certainly know what it does mean to have every coach who I've ever spoken to at this conference say, we don't talk about national championships. We only talk about getting to the SEC championship game. And that's not just talk. That's a real thing. This game means that much to everybody involved in it.
Let's talk Atlanta Hawks. Tell me, I thought it was kind of interesting. Trae Young plays with the ball in his hands. Yeah, Deontay Murray plays with the ball in his hands. I was curious as to how this was going to work, how they were going to play together. How is it going with basically having two guys that dominate the ball? I don't want to call them necessarily point guards, but they really both were, both distributed, both high assists. They're both lead guards would maybe be the term that I would use. How is it going with two of them playing together?
They're a MEH team. You know, it's 20-something games into the season, and their good nights are fine. You know, they don't have a lot of shooters. They don't have a lot of scorers. And if you're going to not play much defense and you got to get it past 120, no sixth man, no seventh man coming off the bench who can absolutely shoot lights out, shoot you into a game. These guys are going to be fine. You know, you just got to get into the postseason and hopefully play better ball back then at the end of the year. I just don't think they play enough defense where really – these two guys, and that's a good way to put it. I say basketball's a positionless game now. Nobody's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But they have two guys who can do a lot of things on the floor. At the end of the day, even if their record was a little bit better right now, and it's not great, I think the problem in the playoffs is going to be who are you going to cover and who are these two guys going to cover, and can you make up for that by just scoring 130 points? It's a really, really hard thing to do a lot of nights.
I like how you said their record's not great. Well, then what the hell are the Knicks' record? What is the Lakers' record? Tell me.
Yeah.
You know, it's doing just fine right there compared to some of these other schools.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's like the Falcons at 5-7. If I would have told you before the year the Falcons are going to have a better record than the Steelers, who are 4-7, you would have said, well, okay, but how? It's sort of an empty calories 5-7, except you're still in the postseason hunt, only one game behind. And Pittsburgh coming in, you know, their season is on the line. So if there is such a thing as being desperate in the NFL as you hit to December, this certainly would be it for Pittsburgh. But the Atlanta Falcons, who are not very talented, and at times they're not very smart. They're okay smart. They're just not very smart at times. They threw another pick into the end zone last week to make sure that they won a game. At 5-7, it's location, location, location. They're in the right division. Absolutely have this game mean something on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm looking at a line here that has them pick -1 against the Steelers team that's not very good. You mentioned it, 5-7. They're just a half game out of first place, chasing a Bucks team that isn't very good either. How much confidence you got that they can get it done?
I like Pittsburgh in the game. I look, again, everybody has their moment where it's just not your year, and Pittsburgh looks like they could be absolutely. But I don't know if it's supposed to happen against the Atlanta Falcons. There's not going to be a home field advantage. There's going to be a lot of Pittsburgh people in the building. I mean a lot. So it's not like they go, well, playing at home is going to give them such a decided thing that if it's a pick 'em, give me the home team. I think if Pittsburgh's going to shoot themselves in the foot and blow every toe left off, to do it in Atlanta would be a hell of a way to go out because it's not a very good team. I don't think either one of these teams has the capability of beating the crap out of either one of them. But I kind of think Pittsburgh in a more or at least as desperate situation, I think they find a way to win. And if not, by the way, great. Fantastic. If the Bucks want to keep the Falcons in it, if there's going to be another game that matters in December, which we didn't think was going to happen around here, I'll just take it as extra bonus, money lying on the street that the Atlanta Falcons are going to pick up at that point.
If they get a win and move to 6-7, then they've got a bye week. The Bucks have got New Orleans this week. Divisional game. They should win it. But then at San Francisco, there's a decent chance that they're sitting there toe-to-toe. And then the schedule down the stretch at New Orleans, at Baltimore, Arizona, Tampa. Meanwhile, the Bucks schedule for the Final Four at Jacks, Philly, at Tennessee, at Washington. I'm sorry, I got off my line. I looked at the Cowboys there. Cincinnati, at Arizona, Carolina, at Atlanta. Kind of even, Steven. I mean,
yeah, it could come down to the last game, which is really, look, The only thing that I think is going to bother people around here, and I'll put myself into this camp, if you fall short, if you give me the excitement of whatever excitement can be when you're an under 500 team trying to go to the postseason, if you fall short and then you look at where you're drafting, where you could have been drafting had this just maybe played out the way that a lot of people did, I think it's going to piss you off. I would love for them to get in, get a little bit of postseason experience. I'll give up the draft pick for that. To play it down to the wire, to not get in, and then to pick somewhere where you're looking around going, I think we just blew 8 or 9 spots in this thing. I think that one's going to be bothersome. So I don't want to have my cake and eat it too. I like the idea that maybe they gain something out of this experience, the coaching staff included. But if you fall short, it's going to really feel like, you know, damn, I want a do-over, and I want to pick in the top 10. I want to pick in the top 7, especially if they think there might be a quarterback worth getting. I don't know if there is. Marcus Mariota is not it. I don't know if Ritter is it or not. And they're going to play Mariota until they're actually eliminated, which is really strange because I would have thought they would have been, and this would have been Desmond Ritter. Let's give him a month to see what he could do. I don't think we're going to see that until they're mathematically out of it.
I love it. Either get busy losing or get busy winning. One or the other. Yeah. We want all of one or the other. Don't fall just short.
Oh, listen, I'm sure you're like me. I root for storylines. Look, I root for certain guys. I root for the teams. But give me storylines. Picking 14th or 15th in an NFL draft, picking 16th is just doesn't do me any good, especially when I'm sort of devoid of talent at this point. So, yeah, it is really anything in the middle. We used to say this about Georgia. If Georgia's 9-3, it's not going to do me any good. You know, be 3-9 or be 12-0, but the 9-3, 8-4s are just they're seasons that don't do anything for our business.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point in my life where I'm looking for somebody to do something for my business.
Chris Domino in Atlanta. You're the man, buddy. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, Seren. Have a great weekend, too.
Zach Blobner is up next. He's in Tampa, Florida, 95.3 WDAE in Tampa. Zach, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. Good to be with you.
All right. Do you see the Falcons as a threat, or are the Bucs about ready to get their act together and play better football?
I'm definitely not betting on the second half of that. I don't know if it's so much the Falcons are a threat or if the Bucs just don't inspire a lot of confidence that they're going to quote-unquote figure it out and go on a run. You know, I just heard you kind of go through their next few games to wrap up the season, and that's why I think the game on Monday night against the Saints is so important, because you don't want to put yourself in a scenario if you lose to New Orleans at home, mind you, by having to then travel to San Francisco, then you welcome in Joe Burrow and the Bengals, and then you're really in a position where you're hoping other teams lose. You're needing some help, potentially, in those last three games. Maybe you have a must-win game against an Atlanta or a Carolina to wrap the year. So the Bucs are still in the driver's seat, but they're barely holding on for dear life. And a loss to the Saints could really send this team spiraling into a bad place. But a win against the Saints, they're still not in it, like, for sure, the postseason, if that's the case. It at least gives them a little bit more breathing room, though, through those next three games.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, I'm sure this is talked about all the time, but what is the feeling? Is this it for Brady, or is he back next year? What's the expectation there in Tampa?
So I still, if I had to guess, would say he's going to be done after this season. I still think he's going to go and start the broadcasting career that he has with Fox already lined up. That being said, we were just chatting about this today here in Tampa Bay. I'm not nearly as confident as I was. Like, I hesitate now when I get that question. And if you would ask me even, let's say, 3 weeks ago, I was still like, oh, yeah, he's done. He's going to hang it up. But now I do hesitate, and I think that that's indicative of his personal situation and not really knowing what to expect out of this team again, like we just talked about down the stretch. Brady's a competitor. Right, and you lost Ryan Jensen, the center, for the year. Chris Godwin is still trying to get to 100%, one of his best playmakers there. So I wonder if, like, the Bucs were to fall short or even get blown out in the one game of the playoffs that they're in, if Brady would say, you know what, let's try one more time. I get my center back. I get, you know, Godwin healthy to start the year. I think that that's more likely now to happen than it would have been a month ago, but I still ultimately think he hangs it up.
Jalen Kitten, a very disturbing story coming out of the Gators. They have let him go, released him from his scholarship. I don't even know what the term is when you kick a guy off the team. Maybe that's the best way to put it. Child pornography found on his computer. How has this rocked Gator Nation?
It's crazy. I mean, I don't think anybody expected it. Son of former Bengals quarterback John Kitna. I mean, this is a kid who has shown that he had all the tools to do the right things, not just on the field, but off it. You know, there wasn't a bad mark against him, and coaches really raved about him. I don't know. It's crazy. When these stories pop up, they always shake the foundation of everything around them. Rightfully so. I mean, it's sickening. It's disgusting. And, I mean, just very disappointing, obviously, off the field. And on the field, too. I mean, look, obviously, there's always separation, right? You look at it from our angle, which is so sports-specific, and you say, well, what are they going to do now at the quarterback position where Anthony Richardson's probably going to go to the draft, but maybe not. Who knows? And then Kitna did get in for a couple plays there in that last game, and you thought, okay, maybe he's the guy next year. So Napier will be back to the drawing board for his quarterback position. In terms of Kitna, I mean, there's no other way to handle it. You got to let him go, and he's going to be dealt with now by the proper authorities, as he should be.
What are the thoughts on year one with Napier?
Oh, man, we need a three-hour show.
Well, give me the 45-second version.
Yeah. I'll say this. He's very disciplined, very low-penalized team. I'd say it's very split amongst the fan base at Gator Nation, because some are like, it's his first year, he's building, he did get the big win against Utah, but there's a lot of in-game things that he didn't necessarily adjust to, and there's some concern with certain fans, myself included, that those will be problems that continue to crop up year in and year out, but it'll be interesting to see how he kind of shifts and moves around with some of the issues. He has that giant staff. Remember, we talked about that. I don't think he's going to make any changes here in this offseason between years. So I don't know how much of an improvement they'll make from the coaching side of things next year. But I think he's done enough to warrant at least, you know, hey, we'll see what happens next season.
Yeah, okay. We'll find out how it does go. How did this happen? The Rays outbid everybody and get Zach Eflin? What's going on with the Rays spending money?
You know, the best part is, so that happens, and everybody's like, they way overpaid for this guy. And I'm like, great. The one time the Rays are like, we'll open the checkbook, everybody else in the league is looking at them like they're crazy. But you know how it goes with this team. They make moves. They see things that nobody else does. It's just usually at a much lower dollar value. So it's another Rays move. We get them every offseason where literally we scratch our heads. We could not figure it out today. I mean, this team could use a lot of upgrades. The rotation, the starting rotation, is not one of them, not at that price point, for a guy who honestly doesn't have great stats. So they must see something in him they think they can tweak and turn him into a top 3-2-1 type of pitcher in a rotation, because anything short of the third best pitcher in your rotation, and you did way overpay for him. Very odd move for the Rays. But hey, they always play chess when the rest of the league plays checkers. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. They still need another bat. You know, they could upgrade a catcher, first base. I mean, there's a lot that they could have done with that money. I hope it means that, you know, they're open to spending more on other positions. But yeah, that was a wild move.
All right, tell me about what's going on with Tropicana Field and development and the latest on a stadium with the Rays.
Yeah, so ironically, the first thing is they have no home for spring training. Unfortunately, those hurricanes, specifically Ian, that hit a few weeks ago, has just ravaged the area that they do spring training and have one of their minor league affiliates in. So they're trying to figure that out right now. They could play at Disney. They could play at the Trop. They could play at a few other sites, too. So that's the most pressing issue. The redevelopment's interesting because even if the stadium, let's just say, goes to Tampa or goes out of the state altogether because they sell or something like that, that area where the Trop is, like, the Rays are tied into that redevelopment regardless of if there's a stadium or not. So, you know, they put out some renderings today and what it would look like. It'd be, like, all-purpose. They build up hotels and apartments around it and just make it a year-round type of area with a stadium. I think ultimately that was today more so a push like, Tampa, if you're going to do something, do it now, because we got to do this. So you're either, you know, on the, what do they say, get on the pot or get off, right? Like, I think that was a big leverage play for them today. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see here by the end of January, hopefully even sooner, the response from the Tampa side.
Yep. Important. Always be on the pot. That's the moral of the story right there. That's what I'm taking from you, Zach. Zach, you're the man. Great stuff. We appreciate it, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, brother. Cheers.
I feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was covering the Chiefs the day Patrick Mahomes was born.
He's in for the winning touchdown. The Chiefs have won in overtime.
He He was covering the Chiefs the day Mahomes brought the Lombardi Trophy back to Kansas City.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Let's talk some Chiefs football. Why wouldn't we? Chiefs-Bengals giant game coming up. Our man Adam Teicher brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. You know, there's a 29-degree man-sized draft beer just waiting with your name on it. Adam, you can't go, but others can go right now. But wouldn't you like to go grab you a 29-degree man-sized draft beer?
I mean, we just got a new board. I think this thing can figure out how to run the show on its own.
Can you handle a 29-degree man-sized draft beer? Do you need the little kitty size?
I feel like
you can't technically have a kitty size of beer, can you?
Yeah, no, I feel like that's one of those things. Can I handle a 29-degree man-sized craft beers like, or draft beers? Like, would I get bored after winning the lottery? I don't know, but I'd love to try.
I'd love to find out. I would too. If you got some family or friends in town for the holidays, show them a good time. Great made-from-scratch food and even better scenic views at Twin Peaks. Plenty of shareable things on the menu. It's your place for the holiday gatherings. Contact your favorite location for more info today. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Independence, Olathe, and of course in the Northland at the Boardwalk Shops. That's where you will find your Twin Peaks. Three locations here around the metro. Go have some holiday cheer at Twin Peaks tonight. Of course, they've got all the World Cup on, NFL, college football, basketball is up and running. Always a great time to get to Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. Always a good time to talk to Adam Teicher. Adam, how are you, my friend?
Good, Saran. How are you doing today?
Living the dream. Maybe better than Justin Reed. I heard the comments of Andy Reid. Not too happy with Justin Reed saying he was going to lock down. I think he met Hayden Hurst. He said kind of T. Higgins. Clearly started a firestorm there in Cincinnati. What was your reaction to Andy Reid's comments today?
Yeah, he was not happy about it. And you know, Justin Reed better play a good game Sunday if he knows what's good for him. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting. I mean, Andy Reid doesn't like that kind of stuff. He doesn't like bulletin board talk or distractions or anything like that. And that's kind of what this is right now for sure.
Did he seem thoroughly upset? Like, we were having a debate here as to how mad he was.
No, I think he was. I think he was upset. I don't. You know, I don't know. I'm sure there's things that have set him off even more than that. But I think he was mad. Yeah.
All right. So, what harm do you think was done? What do you think? You've covered this game for a long time. Do you think this all that gave the Bengals 10 points?
No, I don't. I think these kinds of things are basically overrated. I mean, sure, if the Bengals win, they'll talk about it, and they'll say, yeah, Justin Reed fired us up. But, you know, I don't think it really has any effect. I mean, then they'll say it didn't matter if they lose. I just don't think it really has much an effect. Once they kick off, you know, it might have an effect now and make a guy focus a little more than he otherwise might have. But I think once the game starts, it's a non-factor.
Do you think he locks down Hayden Hurst?
I don't know. I mean, you know, he's done a pretty nice job for the Chiefs. I don't know if lock him down. I don't know if I'd go that far. But, you know, I would expect Justin Reed to play a nice game on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. And Hayden Hurst, I like him. I wish the Chiefs had signed him. I thought he would have been a nice second tight end for the Chiefs. $3.5 million on a one-year deal to the Bengals. I don't know. Maybe they'll go for him next year, although Noah Gray's played pretty well. They clearly like what they get out of Fortson, but you know, locking down Hayden Hurst isn't exactly, you know, priority number one, is it? I mean, like, it's Ja'Marr Chase, if he's going to be back. You know, that's the top one, I would think. Or is it Joe Mixon? What's priority one for this defense?
No, I think it's Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, you know, given that monster game that he had against the Chiefs last year, I think that's job one, assuming he plays and is reasonably healthy and reasonably close to the player we know him as. That's job one. They've got to stop him and work from there. So, yeah, I certainly don't feel like the Chiefs need to make Hayden Hurst their priority, but he could be a key guy for the Bengals, no doubt.
Yeah. Ja'Marr Chase, how do they go at him differently? I mean, do we see some McDuffie on him? Do we see L'Jarius Sneed traveling and staying with him? How do you think they go after, you know, trying to do a better job against Chase this time?
Well, they did a better job on him in the AFC Championship game, so you know, the Chiefs can do that. you know, McDuffie's not you know, the tallest guy in the world, so maybe that's not the best matchup for him. But so I think Snead might be a better matchup for him. So hey, I think the Chiefs will mix it up. You know, give him some different looks, do some different things, maybe a little of everything. Show him some different looks and get it done that way.
Okay, other side of the ball. Patrick Mahomes, awful. Worst half of his career was in that AFC Championship game. Why will it be different this time?
Yeah, well, I can't tell you it will, other than we have no, you know, that's like the oddball, the outlier among all the other halves that he's played. You know, hey, the Chiefs will have some kind of, they'll do a better job of countering whatever the Bengals come up with defensively, whether it's that drop eight strategy or, you know, with the spy. That was so effective last year. You know, you know they've worked on that, but do the Bengals do it? Do they do it a lot? Do they come up with some wrinkles for that? It'd be a pretty good chess game, but the Bengals sure got the Chiefs there last time around. I mean, they really had the Chiefs with no idea how to handle that, and worked pretty well for them.
Do you think this is a game that, you know, the Chiefs are trying to, I wouldn't say downplay it, but that this is one that they bring everything they've got, so and does that bring it? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Does that mean they're too amped up and make mistakes, or is that exactly where you want this team coming into the game?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Chiefs, you know, they played on the big stage before. They know how to handle games like this. They'll be okay in that regard. I don't worry about that. I certainly wouldn't put all my eggs in this basket. I wouldn't push all my chips into the table and say, hey, if we win this game, we're in good shape. I mean, I still think, even if the Chiefs lose, I think they'll be the number one seed anyway. I think they're going to win out even if they lose this game. So, hey, you always want to – I mean, this will make the road a lot easier towards getting that number one seed. No doubt about it. You know, this is an important game in that regard. But I don't think it's – I still think they're going to do it anyway. I think they're playing well enough to do that. So I don't feel like they need to make this game any bigger than really what it is.
Last time, Tyreek Hill, 7 catches, 78 yards, and a touchdown. So it wasn't like he was, you know, big plays all over the place. You know, what does the game plan look like this time? Travis Kelce was 10 for 95 and a touchdown. Mecole Hardman, 3 for 52 and a touchdown. Who has the big day on offense this time?
Yeah, maybe Juju does. You know, this might be a game where he busts it out again. So, hey, I feel like the Chiefs can go a lot of different places. This is a pretty deep receiving group, and Sky Moore was their leading pass catcher last week. That's a pretty good thing for this team, I think, when they can spread it around and get a new hero as a receiver every week. So hard to predict. I mean, I always like Kelce, but Chiefs have some places they can go with the ball, no doubt about it.
We're not going to see Sky Moore returning punts. I think we all feel like that's going to be the case. But with the comments of Dave Tobe, what did you make of him? I do appreciate that he didn't come in with funny ha-has this go round. What did you make of his comments?
No, I mean, hey, they I feel like they've learned their lesson that this team can't be doing that. I mean, the one thing that can sink the Chiefs is turnovers. I mean, you feel like if the Chiefs at least are even in that category, they're going to win most of the time they play. So why risk it? And it feels like finally they've said to themselves, okay, we're not going to do this. That Sky Moore is an off-season project. And maybe next year he can be our punt return guy. So, if that's the outcome, if that's what happened, the fumble against the Rams last week, if that's what that did, then it's all good. You know, then Chiefs needed to learn that lesson, I think, and maybe they did. So, I liked him talking about, in essence, what he said is we've traded some big playability for some ball security, but then he said, but that's what we need right now. Okay. That to me is a light bulb coming on in the Chiefs coaching offices. They figured it out that, hey, we don't have to hit a home run every time we return a punt. It's okay sometimes if we just catch the ball.
The big story last year for the Bengals was that they couldn't protect Joe Burrow. They totally overhauled their offensive line. It's better. It's not the best in the NFL. Chiefs knew they needed to get after the quarterback better after not getting him down in the AFC Championship game. They've got 35 sacks. They only had 31 all of last season. So they're better. Does this game come down to Bengals O-line against Chiefs D-line?
I think that's going to determine the game. If the Chiefs are better at getting Burrow on the ground than they were last year, and particularly in the AFC Championship game, then yeah, I think the Chiefs will win. You know, Chiefs have, what, 21 sacks, I think it is, in their last five games, so they're really getting the job done there this year. I mean, that's a dramatic improvement. You know, the Bengals, for all the changes they made on their offensive line, they're, like, I think, fifth in the league in sacks they've allowed. I think they're also at 35 allowed, so it's not like they're protecting him to any great degree, you know, better than last year. So I think that's a matchup the Chiefs can win, and I'm eager to see, you know, how these guys do. I think that is the matchup that might end up determining this game, is whether the Chiefs can finish better and just do better overall than they did in that title game last year.
Do they hammer away with the run? Is that what this has been about with Pacheco, is to get him ready to pound the rock a little bit more against the Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the solution, or a lot of the solution, if the Bengals are going to drop eight guys into coverage, right? Go ahead and run the ball more than you did last year, and try to make your way last that way. I mean, I can never predict Andy Reid's going to run the ball. You know, I mean, he that's not who he is, and you know, with the quarterback he's got, I'm not sure a lot of the time I blame him for that. But when the opponent is just going to give it to you, you got to take it. And that's where the Chiefs probably failed most of all in the second half of the AFC Championship game last year. So go ahead and run the ball. It's okay. You got three of those guys. I think Ronald Jones looked pretty good in his debut last week. Kind of eager to see him get a little more there. So why not? You know, if the Bengals are going to give you that, go ahead and take it.
All right, let's get to our Final Four with Adam Teicher from ESPN. Adam's brought to you by Twin Peaks. Our Final Four is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health Center, the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care right there, 435 and all, in Overland Park. They're open weekdays 8 to 7, now open Saturdays even longer, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics or walk right in right now. The doors are open there at 435 and all. I will start you with this, Adam. Are you playing the Christmas carols yet?
No.
Wow.
That was quick.
What a Grinch.
Well, here's a hint. I won't be playing them at all.
Really?
Here's another hint. Season. Humbug.
That's my wife calls me Scrooge sometimes.
Wow.
She's not wrong. She's not wrong either.
What an ass. Well, anti-Christmas here.
You hear me arguing with you?
No, I don't. All right, how long is Mel Tucker employed at Michigan State?
Why did you have to go there? You know, you want
well,
me
because
to,
you were so rude I mean, about the Christmas carols. Had you been a happier guy?
The first question you asked me about Christmas carols, you want me to sing some carols, and now you're asking me about Mel Tucker, and now I'm going the other way. I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, he's going to have to make some changes to that staff. They did a horrible, horrible job this year. So I'm going to say he'll be there another 4 or 5 years. They got a lot of money to dig into their pocket if they're going to get rid of him before that. So I'll say he's going to be around for a little while.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the I'm trying to find what the buyout is. Set to make
a bunch.
$85.5 million. I'm looking here for what it is. I can't find it real quick.
But I don't think there is a buyout. I think they got to pay him what's left in that contract. I think that's what they wrote in there. So. I may be wrong about that, but I think that's what it is.
Wow. Okay. We'll see. That'll be interesting. All right. Next up, have you been to Skyline Chili?
Yes, I have. Not a huge fan, but I think I might go this weekend.
Really? Okay. Yep. All right. Mo Egger was just sitting outside was in the parking lot when we called him earlier. So he's a Cincinnati guy, so apparently they like it. All right. Give me your prediction on the game. Who wins, what team, and what score?
Another close game. I mean, we know these two teams came down to the wire twice last year, once in overtime. So I don't have any reason to believe it's going to go any other way. I can't see any other one of these teams getting a huge upper hand unless there's things we can't predict, like turnovers and things like that. So I'll take the Chiefs, maybe like 33-30, something like that. I'll take the Chiefs this time in a close game.
All right. He's got KC 33-30. Adam, you're the man. Enjoy your noodles, cheese, and meat this weekend in Cincinnati.
It's better than Christmas carols, let me tell you that.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. I'm certain I asked this question a year ago when they went to Cincinnati. Who was the last Chiefs quarterback to win a game at Cincinnati? We thought the streak would end. It did not. So who was the last Chiefs quarterback to win at Cincy?
Did I hear 84 or something? Was we were going back to Bill Kenny, maybe?
84.
Todd Blackledge. Todd Blackledge.
Six straight since then.
You know, they act like great Cajun food, by the way, from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Get you some tonight, whether that is out at the Legends or at the original 39th and State Line. Go check it out. Great Cajun food is yours, plus great live music. They are playing the tunes and serving the food at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Great Cajun food at Jazz. Curtis, Todd Blackledge. Did he have a winning record as a quarterback?
I think he did. I think he was like 14-10 or something.
Do you
like
love
that.
His segments on the TV where he goes and eats at a place and they show him sit down with a big plate of food and then take two bites and they think that somehow is great entertainment?
Really?
On ABC, that's what they do.
Yeek.
It's like his thing. He goes to like whatever the hip restaurant is, wherever they're calling the game. He's like, here they have this, they do this, they do that. And he grabs a fork and he takes a bite. And I'm like, settle down.
That's like during the KU Duke game, because it was in Indianapolis, the Champions Classic. They have that St. Elmo's Steakhouse that I guess is very famous for their shrimp cocktail along with their steaks. And Billis, they were bragging it up, and Billis did something similar. Took and shrimp was all he ate. I'm like, you know, that's why you're your size, Billis.
There are plenty of
one shrimp at a time.
Yes, there are plenty of places to go if I want restaurant reviews. You know, there's a thing called the Food Network. You know,
I get it. It's just supposed to be his homespun.
I guess
fun thing.
I mean, it's harmless.
I mean, I think it's fun. Like you go to Nashville, you get shots of the honky tonks. You go to Kansas City, you get shots of them making the bar. Like I get wanting to show off the culture of the town you're in, but just give me shots of it. I don't need a whole segment.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like they do 10 minutes on it. Right.
But still, just yum. Does he ever go? Wow, that's terrible.
He's so robotic about it.
Yes.
That I'm like, you know, it's not like Guy Fieri where it's like, oh, man. Right. I see where you come with
that.
That
is awesome, brother. Righteous brother.
Yeah, like
dude,
there's no.
Dude, that is killer.
You know, I mean, the food, like, take a page out of the Food Network. Like, we can't taste it.
Watch one.
Sell us on it.
Yeah, watch one episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and then take some notes.
Yeah.
Because he knows how to do it.
It makes for one delectable meal. Boom. He takes a fork and takes a bite. I'm like,
yum.
Yeah.
Tasty.
Just like, you got to be kidding
Boy,
me.
Boy, howdy.
You got to be kidding me.
That is zesty and tangy.
Coming up next hour, we will talk to the great Kevin Harlan. We'll get into a little Bill Belichick. We'll get into a lot of Kansas City Chiefs with Kevin Harlan. We'll also get you the things you need to know coming up next. We're going to hear from Andy Reid, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Reid talking.
Maybe
a little Trent McDuffie.
He's good on the mic.
He's great. I love Trent McDuffie. He's quickly becoming one of my
favorites. I could use every answer he said today.
Yeah, he is fantastic. And we'll remind you what Justin Reid said on Wednesday that had Andy Reid upset at Justin Reid. It's a family problem there. Mm-hmm. It's Reid on Reid crime.
Even spelled the same way.
It is. Absolutely. We will take a break, come back. Let's get into it next. Here in the program on Sports Radio, 810 WHB.
All right, just one man has played at least 50 games for both the Chiefs and Bengals. Who is he? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.